For a second judicial district. We are here on this criminal matter. Justice Charity fell sick during the opening argument. He will participate in the deliberation of this case after he reviews the tape and the visual presentation of this matter. With that having been said, if you're ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, please state.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Noble and I represent the state of Nevada here today. Before I begin, may I please reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal? Thank you. The state is here today asking for relief from a court order mandating the disclosure of veneer information, specifically criminal history information of prospective jurors obtained via a database used by the state. This court should grant relief in requesting because the court's order compelling this disclosure isn't grounded in a court rule, it's not grounded in a statutory scheme, and it's not compelled by constitutional law. Additionally, we do take the position that this information is work product of the state within the meaning of the statutory scheme 174. The court's order was premised.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but again, can you expand a little bit upon your statement you just made that it's work product? In what sense?
Certainly. So this court has recognized in Liesel versus State that Nevada extends work product doctrine a little bit beyond what we normally think about. It's not just the conclusions or thoughts of the attorneys or their strategy, but also to report. So, for example, in NRS 174-235 sub 2, we are not required to disclose internal reports prepared by or on behalf of the prosecution in connection with the case. So, our position with respect to the work product is that...
But aren't we talking about a scope printout, so to speak?
I think, thank you for the question. I think we're talking about NCIC. I don't know the term scope, but I think
NCIC,
we're talking
about...
NCIC, but... I'm sorry?
A report of the authorities as the criminal history.
Yes. So, our position would be that this is a government database maintained by law enforcement. As law enforcement, we have access to it. And so it is something that is an internal report in that sense within Chapter 174.
Well, Ms. Noble, before I really work product, you didn't raise, or work product was not raised below the district court. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
So we shouldn't be hearing it here in the first instance. Would you agree with that proposition?
I would generally agree with that proposition. I would note that in the Artigas Morales, the majority opinion, work product concept was alluded to, and we have articulated in the briefs that Chapter 174 does not require this disclosure. However, specifically in the briefs below, I don't believe the word work product was used. Okay. So, moving on from the subject of work product, unless there are other questions from the court, the crux of our position is that due process simply does not require the disclosure of this type of information.
Why not?
Sorry?
Why not?
Because due process, when we're talking about the exchange of information in a criminal case, is governed by Brady and its progeny. It's encompassed by it. And I don't think anyone has taken the position that this is Brady material. It's our position that there is no fundamental fairness requirement independent of the due process requirements outlined by Brady with respect to discovery in a criminal case.
Ms. Noble, what would be the harm to the people, or to the state, pardon me, in providing that information? What's the harm to be avoided by the state exercising its discretion in this regard and ordering it over? What's the harm to be avoided?
Thank you for the question, Justice Stiglitz. I think the harm to be avoided is that when we allow a court to step outside its authority and order the disclosure of information that isn't compelled by a court rule or statute, and it's simply premised upon the idea that this is going to be helpful to the defense. There are many things that could be helpful to the defense. For example, we could give them our questions ahead of time. We could do lots of things.
Counsel, that's not going that far. we're sliding over into, you know, I'll call it fundamental fairness. And the court has the responsibility to create a forum where the accused, they're not guilty, they're merely accused, gets their day in court. And as quite often in the street is asked of officers, well, can I look in your car? And this person says, well, why do you want to look in my car? Well, are you scared to answer the question? The question really for the state is, why are you concerned about giving information only about does a juror have a criminal history? Why is there a problem?
Well, there are a couple of problems. First, it extends the dissemination of sensitive information, including social security numbers and other information compiled by the government, outside the hands of a criminal justice agency. Two, when we're talking about...
Could that be redacted?
It certainly could be. But I think the harm is also that fundamental fairness does not require this disclosure, and here's why.
Is the state supposed to have a, so to speak, a leg up against an accused?
No. Thank you for the question. That's a good question. I'm glad you asked it. Because
isn't the state obligated to present charges and select a fair cross-section of the community?
Certainly.
And does it not penalize a defense if they cannot access the same situation because they're precluded?
Inherent in the question you just asked, Justice Douglas, respectfully, is the assumption that the defense does not have access to this type of information. Private databases such as LexisNexis and other means of investigation could require that. Brady and fundamental...
That wasn't a finding of the law. Wasn't that a question of fact? Ultimately, that the district court should make a determination on as to what availability there is and the sources and the general ability to get that information.
Justice Perry-Gray, that's correct. There was not a finding below with regard to the availability of it, although the state did allege in its pleadings that this information is available via other means. And even in the minority cases where they talk about that fundamental fairness should or perhaps require the state to disclose this type of veneer information, they do know that there are other ways of accessing this information. For example, you could simply ask the jury during voir dire. You could hire investigators. There are other means to access.
Well, and there's problems with that, too. I think for all district court judges, and so we went through many of these questions, and as you're doing your examination on voir dire, I can't imagine that some of these jurors may not be anything less than forthcoming to avoid embarrassment and not wanting to disclose criminal history. So, if you could address that briefly.
Certainly, and I would say that with respect to, for example, a juror that is disqualified from service, as officers of the court, we must bring that up. So if someone has a felony conviction and they cannot serve, that's something that the state certainly has to disclose. But the idea that fundamental fairness with respect to an exchange of information in a criminal case requires us to give veneer information is not really founded in any principle of constitutional law.
Well, Ms. Noble, you agree this court has the authority, the rulemaking authority for criminal procedure. So if we take the district court out of it, and this court's trying to decide whether to implement a rule that requires this type of disclosure, what is the harm to be avoided? You've said it's secure data. That's correct, but you are permitted under court order to provide that data to the defense. That is part of your contract or your NCIC requirements. Sensitive data that's not relevant can be redacted. So what is the broader issue? If the court were so inclined to make such a rule, what is the broader concern? Because now we've taken out the district court just doesn't have authority to do that. If this court decides, hey, we're going to make that rule, what's your concern? What's the state concerned with if that information is given to the defense?
I think the primary concern is where this could lead in terms of precedent, because we're expanding the state's discovery obligations beyond Brady or anything contemplated by the Nevada Supreme Court's treatment of the Brady and its progeny. So for
Brady,
example,
you keep bringing up Brady. Brady is exculpatory evidence. It's not a fundamental fairness. It's not I use the generic term of due process. Due process, to me, is greater than just Brady. Because you're talking about an opportunity, a fair opportunity, that process. We're not talking about process that finds you guilty before you've been even before a jury of your peers.
Certainly, and I agree with that last statement, Justice Douglas.
So I guess where is the prejudice, rephrasing what was asked, where is the prejudice to the state?
Because we're going to start expanding obligations of the state beyond what is constitutionally required. The Constitution does not require parity of information. To the contrary, there is a
Doesn't
lot of...
Doesn't the Constitution require a fair trial?
Certainly, but there's been no...
And how does that make it unfair?
It doesn't make it unfair, but there's been no showing that a fair and impartial jury cannot be seated without access to this information. When we are expanding this...
Why should the state have it and not the defense?
Because it's something as a criminal justice agency we have access to. I would also ask the question, or posit the question, that if the defense obtains information about the veneer via an investigator, via LexisNexis, via some other, their internal records of who they've represented, witnesses that they know about. Well, if parity of information is required at trial, then the defense would need to give that to us as well. And that would be the state's position on that.
Ms. Noble, don't we need... I'm troubled by the lack of showing and hearing, both by the fact that the prosecution didn't raise work product below, because that's a pretty interesting discussion that needs to be had, and the fact that the defense didn't explain what they're asking for, why they can't get it themselves. We didn't have that kind of discussion down below. I mean, is this case better remanded for a full record before this court comes in and perhaps considers making a rule?
Certainly it could be remanded for a full record, but I don't think it's necessary because what this court recognized in the Ortega-Morales decision is that the Constitution does not require the disclosure of this information. Even these cases cited by the majority opinion in that case, Matthews, Murdershaw, Tagala, Goodale, all of those find no reversal. And with respect to Goodale, they say, well, equal knowledge of the veneer is not constitutionally required, even though they talk about it being a fairness concern. With respect to this court's ability to make a rule, certainly I think that's within the ability and the purview of this court. However, the legislature has evinced an intent to occupy this field, where we expand the state's discovery obligations and what we need to turn over beyond Brady and its progeny. The legislature has shown its intent to make those rules. So this question would be better posed for the legislature in terms of the expansion. And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time, if I may.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. And before I start, let me wish the court a happy new year. My name is John Petty. I'm here on behalf of the Real Party in Interest, Francisco Ojea, and representing the respondents. The question before the court this morning is simply this: did the district court below manifestly abuse her discretion when she ordered the state to produce a hard copy of a jury list, a criminal history jury list, that it routinely runs before conducting every trial in the second judicial district court? And the answer, I think, is simply no. She did not manifestly abuse her discretion. She did not act arbitrarily and capriciously in making this order. She did not enter an order that is a clear error of law. She had the authority to do it. If Justice Cherry were here, I think, and I don't mean to speak for him, but I think he would say it's within the inherent power of the court, particularly with regards to its authority to ensure a smooth and effective and fair jury selection process.
Mr. Pick, I ask you one question. Going back to Ortega-Morales, again, in that case, the district court did just the opposite and denied access to this information. The court concluded that the district court didn't abuse its discretion. Do you read that case as leaving the issue open? Here we have a situation where it's the reverse, what Judge Simons ordered. So do you feel if we agreed with your position, we're not inconsistent with Ortega-Morales?
Yeah, two answers. First is, in the second judicial district court, other district court judges post Ortega-Morales have granted the request for this information. So I don't think that district court judges feel that that particular ruling removes from them the discretion to make that discretionary call in the appropriate instance.
But what informs that discretion? I mean, Artiga Morales was very focused on the idea that if this is going to come into play, there should be a statute or a court rule, a rule of criminal procedure, that affords this. So all defendants in all cases are treated the same, and it's thoroughly vetted precisely what information is provided. For example, a juror has a privacy interest in an arrest record. If the printout, and we don't have that in this file, in this record, shows what the arrest record but not the conviction record is, should that be turned over to the other side? Your client has a right to see what you have as your client's lawyer. Certainly, I would be surprised if you said to your client they can't see this information. And I think that there's a policy balance that needs to be made in a determination. It concerns me to say it's a discretionary call, case by case, by an individual district court judge without some criteria pertinent to the case other than the district judge's predilection that drives this. I mean, I think Artiga would permit it to be done in an extraordinary case with some showing, but I don't see anything like that here.
Well, yeah, hopefully in answering your question, I'll also be able to answer Justice Gibbons' question. If this court were to agree with my position, it can frame an order or an opinion that does not reverse or challenge what the court did in Artiga, because the posture of this case is different than Artiga. In Artiga, the question that was presented to the court was, will you please reverse my client's conviction, criminal conviction, following a jury trial, because I did not get this information prior to trial. The majority of the court said, we're not going to do that because it's speculative as to whether or not there was any harm. And you can't show prejudice because there was nothing in the record that this court characterized as an undeveloped record to really lend strength to the argument that I should get a new trial. The posture of this case is we are prior to trial. The defense has made a request for this information that the state routinely gathers and simply asks that the court grant it the same.
Right, but why did the court grant it in this case? I mean, I understand the different procedural postures, but what basis is there for the district court judge to have granted it in this case when the district court judge down the hall is going to turn it down?
I suspect that if this court were to agree with the position advanced by the real party in interest here, the disparity, if it still continues to exist in the Second Judicial District Court, will simply fade away. The authority that the court cited was this decision that fundamental fairness required parity with regards to the jury selection process. You know, in Artiga, in the dissenting opinion, Justice Sherry said that it, essentially the effect of it was beyond him as to why this information should not be shared. To me, it boggles my mind that we're actually been having this argument, because when you think about it, there is no harm, to bring up Justice Stiglitz's question, there is no harm to the state in sharing this information. It is not a work product. I spent in my prior life, before I was an appellate attorney, I was the discovery master for the Second Judicial District Court, and if this issue had been brought to me in my capacity there, I would have recommended to the district court that it is not work product, because a printout from a governmental database does not contain middle impressions, conclusions of law, legal theories, strategies. If the question were to the district court, please order the prosecutor to give us their copy of this jury list after they had written upon it and made notes upon it, that would be work product. But the pure document itself is just a fact in the world. It is not work product. So I don't think that you have to concern yourself about that. I don't think we need to.
I'm less concerned about the work product than, I mean, I could see some cases where it might be work product if there were attorney notes on top of the printout or that kind of thing. But even accepting that position, what I'm trying to understand is if you don't have a statute and you don't have a court rule that authorizes this, what informs a district court judge's discretion whether to grant this or not that ensures fairness defendant to defendant and case to case across all the cases?
Well, I think to answer that question, to make it fair across all the cases, this court should agree with us and say that the court has the discretion to grant the motion. If this court enters an opinion or an order indicating that a district court judge has the discretion to enter this kind of order, that discretion will be exercised, I think, in such a fashion as to be fundamentally fair. We have a criminal justice system that isn't perfect, but it strives towards fairness. All that is being asked here is that parties be placed in a position where they have equal access to information, criminal history information, about these jurors.
But if you credit your position, then Artiga needs to be disapproved or limited, because it's difficult for me to accept a rule that says defendant A in courtroom 1 will receive this, but defendant B in courtroom 2 won't, because it's entirely a matter of the discretion of the district court judge whether to order it or not. We have no rule, we have no principle. Well, and even-handedness among similarly situated defendants matters too.
Well, Justice Pickering, if we let it stand as it is now, then some defendants will get that information because district courts are granting the request, and other courts are denying that request. If you follow the position advanced by us, I suspect that the resolution will be that that information will be granted wherever the request is made in any criminal trial. So every criminal defendant will have that information. If the court's concern is about divulging information that should not be divulged, a district court has the power to enter protective orders with regards to any kind of disclosure, and it could exercise it in the appropriate case and with the appropriate arguments made by the parties. In fact, if you want to go to the extreme example, in some instances, a district court judge has the authority to, although it frustrates defense counsel, enter an order for an anonymous juror, where you get very little information with regards to the potential jurors.
So the rule for which you're advocating is that a defendant on request for the state's NCIC printout is entitled to it on request.
I would say that is the resolution of what I'm requesting. Today's issue is, did the district court manifestly abuse her discretion? The answer is no. A broader rule is, should defense counsel have access to that information? The answer is yes.
Mr. Penny?
There is no harm, and the harm that was identified by the state isn't harm to the state per se. It's an argument that, in the state's view, district court judges' power should be cabined somehow so that the slippery slope argument, if we do this now, then down the road there's going to be more outrageous requests made by defense counsel, and I think that's just a scare argument that this court need not credit.
Mr. Petty, as a former discovery master.
We see you, they call him commissioner. The rule says commissioner, they call him a master.
You're well acquainted with the concept that just because they have it doesn't mean you don't necessarily get it. The issue I have is we keep saying there's disparity, disparity, disparity. There's no showing that the defense has come out and said, we can't get this by alternative means. We haven't searched other databases. It's not even what exactly they're asking for. So to my colleague's point about this exercise of discretion that you're requesting being completely untethered here, what showing would be required for us to consider that rule? Wouldn't it be more than just they have it, I want it? Because we're not entitled to everything they have as a defense perspective.
Okay, it's not the rule isn't they got it, so we want it. Mm-hmm. That would not be the rule.
Because if they don't run it, the defense, you'll agree, would not be able to make them run it.
Absolutely.
So if they say, fine, we're not going to get to it.
Absolutely. In the issue below, and in fact, Judge Simon's order says, if you run it, if you create this list, then bring it to me on that Friday. In Washoe County, the jury list is issued late Thursday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so what the district court judge did below was direct the state to deliver a hard copy of their history. It is the criminal history that they routinely run. I don't think anybody... I
appreciate the criminal history piece, but are you saying then, there's no record here that says the defense can't find out the criminal history on their own? They devote an employee or two to run each of these.
I was going to get to that.
Okay.
Institutional defenders, such as the Public Defender's Office in Washoe County, the Public Defender's Office, the Clark County Public Defender's Office, and any other institutional defenders in Washoe County or in the state of Nevada that have investigators, probably can run some Google searches and some... I'm not a social media guy, so I don't want to start naming things untoward. But whatever rule this court advances isn't going to affect just institutional defenders. It's going to affect private and sole practitioners and small firm practitioners who do criminal defense, who may not have the resources, who may not have an investigator to do that social media research. Maybe we can ask them to file witness motions before the court to get the necessary money to do that. Who knows? But the question is, why? All that is being asked is for the criminal histories that the state routinely runs so that in the course of preparing for voir dire, the defense counsel can use it, one, to educate themselves with regards to the appropriate challenges he or she may want to make, and two, prepare them to be able to respond or not to any kind of challenge that the state makes, either peremptory or for cause. There may be a good cause reason the state doesn't want any particular juror to serve that's reflected in that document. If that's the case, then defense counsel is not going to make an argument against that, and that just saves time. It's efficient and effective. But I want to go back. There is, I am dumbfounded by the notion that the state is somehow harmed to give over information that basically is just a printout. I don't understand that. And in a system of fairness, and you're right, I keep saying parity, I keep saying fair playing field, and I will keep saying fair playing field and parity, because that's all that we're talking about here, is there is no good reason not to allow the district court to grant that request. There is no good reason to enter an order saying to district courts, you cannot, you may not divulge this information. You may not order the district attorney's office to divulge this information. There is simply no, I mean, we talk about the rule that seeks to ground the district court's authority to grant this request. What is the rule or authority that says the court cannot do that? I think the court, and I think Justice Sherry suggested this in his dissent in Ortega, there is an inherent power that the district court has to control its authority. I know to control its jury selection, and I'm out of time. Thank you very much. And before I sit down, can I just say one more thing? It has nothing to do with this case. I was watching an argument last month, the first of the last month, the first of December, and Justice Douglas, you and Justice Cherry announced your retirement. And so I made a note to myself that if my first chance here, I wanted to thank you for your service to the court and to the judiciary in the state of Nevada.
Thank you. On behalf of the state.
Thank you. The question that was not raised by anyone, but the order was entered in February of 2016. And the state did not run its writ until February of 2017, a year later. What accounts for that delay?
Thank you for the question, Justice Pickering. I can't immediately answer that. I apologize. I can certainly brief the court on that.
No, it just, I mean, and the other side didn't raise laches either, but it's of concern to me with the number of writs we get that there's a year-long delay between the order and the writ.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't file the writ itself. And
thank you. Don't. That's fine.
Okay, thank you. So when we're talking about fundamental fairness, the question that this court should consider is, what is the source of this purported right to equal access to veneer information? Where does it come from? Does it come from the Due Process Clause? Is this such a a fundamental right that it should be a rule of criminal procedure in the state. When we talk about Teague versus Lane, what should be retroactive, what shouldn't, watershed rules of criminal procedure, these are rules like the right to counsel when you're accused of a felony or jail time, the right to not have a coerced confession introduced. Those are the types of rights that are appropriate when we're talking about a fundamental fairness concept. This order was capricious in the sense that it was contrary to the rules of this state. There is, or it has no foundation in established law. This court announced in Ortega-Morales that there is no constitutional right, there is no court rule, and there is no statute that compels the disclosure of this information. And if this court were to take the position that Mr. Petty is requesting, you would have to overrule Ortega-Morales because there was a finding in that case that that did not create constitutional error. So in conclusion, the state would say that due process simply does not require symmetry of information. And this court has recognized in Steese versus State that if the defense can get information another way, we're not required to get it to them. There's been no showing that they cannot get it. This court.
So what's wrong with the analysis in Murdashaw?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last
one. What's wrong with the analysis in Murdashaw? The California court said we're going to make an assessment about certain information. If it is available to the state but unavailable to the defense and might be critical to the preparation for the case, we're going to release it. Why wouldn't we consider that rule?
Thank you for the question. I would say that with Murdashaw, if I may finish answering the question.
To the question.
Thank you. In Murdashaw, the court was talking about this fundamental fairness concept, but they're talking about preparation for trial. And constitutionally, the state doesn't have any obligation to assist the defense in preparation for trial. That's not covered by Brady and its progeny, and the exchange of information in a criminal case, due process, are encompassed by that line of cases. If I may have one final thought.
Go ahead.
Thank you. This court should issue a ruling indicating that the defense is not per se entitled to criminal history of the jury veneer. If there is some special showing made by the defense, then certainly the individual courts can entertain that. But that's what we're asking for today. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank counsel for the argument today. Matter of interest, as was evidenced by questions presented this day. We appreciate the additional information as that this matter will stand submitted, and as I indicated, Justice Sherry will participate after he reviews the audio and the visual in this matter. Thank you.